Okay, as best as you can, describe your music.
It's been interesting because over the past year, we've been starting to kind of combine our music. So we both kind of have different, I guess, backgrounds and styles that we kind of are drawn to. But I guess I'm specifically, my music is really conceptual, and I really get inspired by music that has a story behind it or is about something very specific. And I like to know that, or if it's just something that feels like it's telling a story, that it's going somewhere. So it's interesting because I was brought up in the jazz tradition, which a lot of times is really based around kind of just like solos and hitting like chord changes and whatnot. But the stuff that really resonates with me goes to different kind of worlds. So like some of the biggest inspirational stuff that I remember listening to as a kid was even some classical music. I don't listen to tons of classical music, and I love it, but was one of the pieces I remember was Appalachian Springs, which just because it told a story. So like one of my assignments in high school was to like write a story. So I actually wrote a story based on Appalachian Springs. And it's just really interesting, like, to see kind of how that affected, how kind of that's kind of been a thing that's stayed with me along the way. And as I've grown as a musician and in different styles, that kind of stays with it. I've always loved, I'm definitely a people person, and I like, getting to know people, and that goes in with music. If music is about a person, then great, then it's kind of, it tells me something. So that's what my music, I feel like a big part of it is.
And how do you, where does your style fit in?
Well, I think it's easier for me to talk about how I write or how I create music than describing it from the outside. And my music is really just an extension of my heart. And not to be like overly romantic when I say that or flippant, it really is. I mean, I don't create it out of anything else. I don't tend to use my intellect when I write or when I create music too much. I just try to access something that's present that maybe I can bring into fruition in some way. And in a lot of ways, jazz is a wonderful framework because you can be very creative and you can use improvisation. But a lot of my music just comes out of what I grew up listening to, which is musical theater and, the great folk artists like Joni Mitchell and James Taylor or Carole King even, and then later Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan and those type of folks.
Yeah, you actually started out in musical theater, isn't that right?
I did.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. How did you get from musical theater to doing jazz?
Well, I did my first play when I was 8, and from there on, I had been bitten by the bug, so to speak, and I started doing productions in the big city, Toledo, which was near where I grew up in Perrysburg, Ohio. So I did shows both in my school system and in Toledo at the Repertory Theater. And I just loved to sing and I loved to act and I took dance, and it was a wonderful format for me to be able to share my gifts, and I just really enjoyed it. Vocal training at that time was primarily opera or classical or musical theater. So those were the two things that I was taught. I was never taught how to sing pop music. It was not something that people taught formally. So I ended up in the opera department at the University of Cincinnati and was like, this isn't for me. And I'd sort of grown out of musicals. I'm not sure when the transition happened, but I had this deep need to really explore who I was. And there were just all these things going on inside me that I wanted to unentrench, okay, that I wanted to unearth. And I found my way into jazz because I could be my own person. I could be my own character if I wanted. I wasn't limited to a script or to someone else's words. I wasn't limited to anything beyond my own imagination. So that really attracted me.
Yeah, and I heard in one article that your music, your writing was described as very personal, and that you actually write about your faith a lot.
I do.
Yeah, what, why write about your faith?
Well, it's not a conscious choice. It's simply, that's become my worldview over time, and it's part of how I process things and how I make sense of this wild experience that we're all in. So I don't necessarily choose to write about it, but I do have this relationship with God, and I ponder that relationship. I ask questions. I deal with that in my music a lot.
And so you both have been playing with big names in New York. And so talk about that experience, that New York jazz scene.
Well, I was only there for a few years, actually. I went and got my master's at Manhattan School of Music, and it was just an amazing experience. I mean, just the city in itself is a school. I mean, any musician or any artist that goes there, you know, they'll tell you that because that's why they go there. They don't go there to make money. You don't go there to, you know, to financially, like, further yourself. You go there to kind of grow as an artist. Because there are so many different kinds of musicians, there are so many different levels. And, you know, you can go from the best musicians in the world, best artists in the world, most creative, to just regular folk that are kind of there. And just the city itself, just, I guess, culturally even, is there's so much you grow in that, you know, place. There's so many things going on. I think, of course, you have to, like, be a person that wants to be there. There's people that aren't city people, but I think me and Ashley both are, and we loved it. And, you know, just in my short time there, like, I grew so much personally. I grew so much musically, just being around people, playing with older musicians, more experienced. And there's this kind of camaraderie that eventually, you know, happens just because you're present and you're all going for similar things. And you start to just, you know, get your kind of, your group that you kind of, you know, not that there's, like, you know, cliques or whatever, but, like, it's really interesting. It's its own little, like, you know, own little world there. So yeah, you grow a lot, and it's an amazing place, and you leave changed, you know, even if you're there for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, it was for me a life-changing experience.
Do you have a favorite story, either of you, from being in New York and, you know, really, you know, having that experience in just with all of those musicians?
Seems like every day was a story, but
Yeah, I don't think I could point out just a New York experience, because your experience is New York. Your experience is, you know, getting around the city itself, just, you know, having one thing that I miss a lot that I think actually really helped me as a person was having the time on the train. Because, you know, you're traveling a lot, and you travel a lot more than you do here, but it's a different thing because you kind of, you're sitting, and you have a good, you know, half hour, 45 minute commute at minimum usually. And, you know, especially as musicians, we listen to music a lot, and we'd always have, you know, you'd see people with their iPods in. So I'd sit there and I'd listen to music. I'd read books. I read and listened so much more than I do when I live in Michigan. I feel like that experience in itself, something unique. I mean, I know there's a lot of public transportation all throughout the world, but, like, for me, that was huge. And then also just the different people you'd see while taking all this stuff in. It's like, oh man, you know, there's like five different, you know, people from five different places in the world that are in one, you know, one car on the train. It's just, it's great.
Yeah. Well, I think professionally New York helped me to kind of interact with myself, like, on multiple occasions where I kept having to challenge myself to be better and bigger and more open, well past my comfort zone. So it really pushed me to grow, which was what I needed, and I continue to need that. But, you know, and it's really basic that if you want to do something in life, you go seek out those people who are doing it, and you follow them around and see how they do it, that this thing you want to do. But I'd say if we had one story, it would be a personal story, which is that my daughter slept in a closet for a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully Child Protective Services is not listening to this.
You're right.
But
don't listen.
The nature of New York is such that many people have roommates. And I happened to be a single parent there in a two-bedroom apartment. So I took on a roommate, and then I took on another. And then we all decided, well, we needed this fourth person so we could split the rent, the obnoxiously high rent. And so we fashioned the walk-in closet into my four-year-old, at the time, her bedroom.
And just for me, when I heard she was doing this, like, you can't do that. This is a bad idea. Don't do it. But I went over and saw it, and actually it was really awesome. I kind of wish I had a room like that when I was a kid. It was, just so for the listeners to know, it was a big closet. And it was really well kept. There was lots of room.
We lofted the bed up, and, you know, you have to get creative. That's my point. You get creative, and you have to be flexible when you're dealing with different square footage.
So how old is your daughter now?
She is 9. And then we have another daughter who's 1.
So have you told her about this story of how she was in the closet?
Oh, she remembers. And I think, you know, she thinks it's funny.
She tells people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's like,
she's
is that
proud
my...
of it. Proud of the yeah. Proud of the closet.
Yeah, she's funny.
But she's a city girl, you know. She was born in, well, she was born in D.C., but... You know, it's not abnormal, I guess.
Oh, by the way, how did you two meet?
We met at Manhattan School of Music. We were both getting grad degrees in jazz performance there. And we had a reading session where people bring in original compositions. And then there's a slew of musicians hanging out just to read whatever instruments you may need. So Benji volunteered, and the rest is history. Kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, we became really good friends and eventually started dating. And he played in my band. And then, we decided to move back towards family for a bit, which is here. Benji's from Grand Rapids, and part of my family's based here. So,
yeah, why did you decide to move back to Michigan?
Well, I went to undergrad at Western. I got my music education and jazz trumpet degree here. So I spent 5 years here. So it felt to me like a second home to Grand Rapids, because, you know, all that happened. And like Ashley just said, she has family that lives in the area. And so she had visited multiple times, and we both kind of felt a connection to Kalamazoo, strangely enough. And it was totally random, but we felt it'd be a good middle point to, you know, near my parents and near hers. And we like the community. And so we just figured, hey, let's go to Kalamazoo. We had no other job opportunities.
Well, you know, yes, it's true. We're very happy here. We have a lovely little home and a lot of opportunities. But to be honest, for me at that time, the word that came to mind all the time was unsustainable. For me, as a single parent living in New York City, as a musician, it was unsustainable just because of finances. And I needed a reprieve, honestly. I needed to take a break. I had just been through grad school. You know, there was a lot of intense things that had happened. So we came back and we took a break from playing, and honestly, I only played in church for about a year and a half. So,
yeah, we just took, you know, we decided we're going to take some time away. And it was once moving back, I was, when I left Michigan, I was working as pretty much almost a full-time musician. Like, I mean, that's what I was doing for my living. And so coming back, I started getting a lot of calls, and it was, you know, it didn't feel right for me to take the gigs for some reason. So I started, you know, kind of saying no. And I would take a rare one on occasion if I really wanted to do it, but it was really strange because it was a time that I needed to grow in a different way. I knew, like, for me coming back, I knew that I needed to grow up as a person, you know, becoming a father, becoming a husband. I knew that I needed to be that first. I needed to kind of do that. And I think being a musician, full-time musician, wasn't good. I needed to step away from that. So, yeah, it was a, interesting time. But yeah, we took about a year and a half off of like any kind of playing for both of us. And it was weird having our evenings and not feeling like we had to practice and not, you know, doing this, that we through that whole time, we actually taught music lessons, but we just weren't performing. And coming back, it's been just, a really kind of, nice experience coming back actually, because I really want to play, and it just feels differently. It just feels like I've grown, and now I can approach music in a fresh way.
So did you guys decide a timeline for that break? Or if not, you know, what snapped you back into the music world?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a baby. So I guess after she was a few months old, I started getting those, you know, little pokes and inklings like, hey, I want to be doing something. So since about February of 2012, it's like that. And I've had other times in my life where for one reason or another, I haven't played music, and it always comes back. It's not really optional.
Yeah. We had no like timeline as to say, we're going to take a year off. We're going to take 2 years off. We just came back and said, well, we need to step away from it. We don't know why. Like we both felt strongly that that was what we needed to do. And we did. And, I was looking for a job. I started working at a church, and, we both were still somewhat involved, but, a year ago, it was really strange. About the same time, we both started kind of feeling like, oh yeah, this is who we are. And Ash had taken time away from music before in her life, and I actually hadn't. I'd never really stepped away, and I feel like I needed to. If you're an artist or a musician or whatever you are, you know, you step away from it, you're going to come back to it. You can't, you know, there's no way you can be something else. And so I feel like that time really taught me, you know, yes, you are that. And that is what you're supposed to be pursuing, you know, and the lessons that I learned over the past year or two will help contribute to that. But this is who you are. And we both realize that about the same time. It's like, well, we can't run away from who we are. It's going to catch up to us at some point. So it did.
So what was the first gig? Did you guys do your first gig when you came back from that break together, or separately, or, you know, who did you partner with, I guess?
Well, we had the little fits and starts gigs. One was just kind of sitting in on a weekly jam session at the Strut with bassist Sam Weber, but that's now closed. So, and then what did we do after that?
I don't remember. I think
it was very much fits and starts. Yeah. Until
it wasn't like a big, hurrah. Like, yeah. We're doing it. We're back. No, it was like, oh wait, someone called me. Should I do it? I guess I should. I mean, but we started, I guess as the summer went on, we started to book stuff together. We started to kind of say, well, what do we want our life to look like as a family, as, you know, as husband and wife of musicians? How do we make this work? You know, how do we keep our family united while, you know, music can very easily bring people different directions. So we've been very careful about planning that, about, you know, very specifically, you know, like performing with each other as much as we can, going to each other's gigs, bringing the family to gigs, you know, having the girls at rehearsals if need be. And so I think that's been the biggest thing since coming back. Like, it wasn't necessarily like a big push, but it's like, we eased in for like a year pretty much. We didn't like jump, you know, feet first. We just walked into the shallow end and we did it together. So And that's kind of the most exciting thing, that we're doing this together. We're not kind of, you know, there's not Ashley's career and Benji's career, but there's, you know, our careers, and we're moving forward with each other. You know, we might do things separately, but we're both involved.
So what are the challenges of working with your spouse?
Well, you want to take this one, honey?
You know, it's, we've been asked that a couple times now. I think every interview we do, I think people,
and I think she just threw you the shotgun.
Right, no, it's, I really enjoy it. I mean, I have always loved making music with Ashley, like, cause she invited me to, you know, play with her band. And from the get go, it was, really, really great. Cause she thought at a high level, like through her heart, like she was talking about, you know, playing from the heart. And I was very much, even though I enjoyed, you know, like conceptual stuff, I was pretty intellectual about my music, you know, like it, making this and that. But, I feel like being around her, like, grows me as a person. And it can be difficult sometimes, like, you know, just even through, you know, growing as a husband and wife, you know, I think we're really good at communicating and listening to each other. And I think that's one of the most important things. And one of the things that we need in order to be successful as, you know, a married couple working together, and just as a married couple, like, I think that we've from the get-go really worked hard at being really good at communicating and listening to each other. And, you know, always being, I think the big word I keep thinking of is unity and united, that we stay united through it all. And it's hard. It's difficult, just like any relationship should be. Any good relationship does take work, you know? But it's, there's no question that it's worth that effort.
Well, what I'm thinking about is how spouses can become jealous of one another or competitive with one another. And it doesn't even have to be a career thing. It could be like, well, you always have free time, or you always have time with your friends, or, you know, we really can do that with anything. So I think we try really hard to remember that we're always on the same team, and that if one of us is suffering, it, you know, well, the expression goes, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy, or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think that might have a little truth to it. But Benji and I, we had to build a strong relationship because we met in such a way where he was younger and I had been divorced and I was a parent already. So from the beginning, we had to navigate everything with tons of communication, well beyond, I think, any relationship I've ever had, and probably most people's. So it's served us really well.
Glad it's working out.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the music itself. I, you know, was reading some of these reviews and articles, and one thing that I saw over and over again was they called your music intimate jazz. You know, what do you mean by that?
Like, whenever I hear that phrase, and I know people like have used that a lot, I think of, like, you know, the smooth jazz, like, CD cover with, like, candlelights and a saxophone sitting there, and, like, I don't know, it's just, but I don't know. I think intimate jazz is, I think it's just getting to know someone through, you know, whatever. If you're intimate with someone, you're getting to know them personally, like, at a real level. So in a lot of ways, I take that as a compliment, because it feels like we're, you know, not putting up a facade, or, like, you know, trying to be anything we're not, but it's like, it's intimately drawing people in. And I guess a lot of times it entails, you know, not necessarily, like, loud and bashing and crazy. I do enjoy playing that way sometimes. I much prefer a more kind of introspective, approach to music.
Introspective is a good word. And I'd also say tender and deliberate. We create our music very deliberately, with a lot of thought and introspection, like you said.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, especially when we're playing with each, you know, even as a couple, we try to be intimate with each other, just as a couple. Like, we need that. We need to stay, you know, like, real with each other. So I think it comes across in the music, and we try to be real in our music, you know?
Yeah. Transparency is, like, super important for me. And I think part of that comes from being in an industry where you're always looking at these iconic type of people, or people who are larger than life, or they've got all these success stories or all these reviews. And it's like, well, what about them, the person, or what about their personal life, or well, who are they really? I don't know them. And for me, that's just always attracted me. I want to really know somebody.
And another thing that I saw was that you have a love of lyrical storytelling and a willingness to take interpretive risks. And we kind of talked about storytelling already, but what is this willingness to take interpretive risks?
Sure. Well, in jazz, we typically use the American Songbook, which is, you know, your Gershwin, Irving Berlin, all these classics that were written during the 30s and 40s and beyond. And typically, most people, there are some certain components to those songs. One is the harmony or the chord changes underneath the melody and the lyric. And typically, people want some of those to stay intact when you're presenting that music in this day and age. So I guess, it's hard to explain that. I just know that for me, the only key that I feel is important to stay intact is the lyric. Well, no, let me rephrase that. I guess I see the composer's material as just raw material for me to do with what I wish, as long as it's an honest story that I can tell. And I'm not trying to put anybody on with a fake story. I'm free to change the harmony. I feel free to change the melody at points. And I feel free to alter the lyrics, as long as it's telling an authentic story. And I've been criticized by others for that, and they disagree, and they think that if you might as well, I think I'm quoting, you might as well write your own song if you're going to change all those things. And they're not wrong. I mean, I agree. I do write my own songs, but it's fun for me. It's like, it's just a muse. Say, well, I have this melody and these lyrics, and what does it mean to me? And I put it through my experiences as a filter. So I feel free to do that, but a lot of people don't quote-unquote approve of doing that to standards.
Yeah, well, it's also the way I interpret it is kind of, it's like a good storyteller that, you know, is retelling a story. A good storyteller will tell the basic information of the story, but make it uniquely different because of that's their art. Their art is you know, shaping their story in only the way they can. So as artists, you know, I view my job as to interpret whatever it is, whether it's an original composition or it's a song that I really feel like I want to arrange, you know, it's an open landscape. And that's what's really fun about it, is that I can create something. We can write our own song based upon someone else's song. That there's liberties to do that in jazz, especially, you know, where you do have this freedom to, you know, bring it any way you want. And of course, people are going to disagree with you, but that's just life sometimes, you know. But yeah, I think that I take that as a compliment too. Taking interpretive risks is great because it's moving, it's going somewhere, it's doing something, versus just kind of staying stagnant. The, you know, playing a song the way it's been played for 50, 70 years is good in some senses, but it's not necessarily what I want to be doing. Like, it's not my expression of it. And some people, you know, don't really feel like they're called to, like, you know, be telling a story, but like I do, like I want to tell my own unique approach to something.
For example, there's a recording of My Man's Gone Now, which is a Gershwin tune from the opera Porgy and Bess years and years ago. And the original is slow in 3/4 tempo, like a waltz time. And, it's like a very mourning song, and she's so sad because her husband has left, or her man has left, and he's gone, and she's all alone, and what will she do now? Very mournful. And for me, at the time that I was arranging that, I was experiencing the loss of a relationship, but my primary emotion was anger. And so when you hear the song, you can really hear that I'm really not that sad. I'm kind of in the phase of I'm, you know, pretty mad right now.
Yeah, it's a little sassy sounding.
Yeah. And you know, it helped me.
Well, since we're on the topic of specific songs here, did you want to discuss some of these that we have on the record?
Sure. In a Way, He's Just Like Me is a song that I wrote, and it basically talks about how whether somebody is a demon or a saint, we'll just put it that broadly, that there is a piece of them that is also in us. So whether we emulate them and put them on a pedestal, or whether we feel like we hate them at the moment, there's a likeness in all of us. So that's about that. Appreciate is kind of a weird song, but I like it because it talks about how people, what's that word?
What is the, what's the definition?
The where they appeal to people.
Pander.
Pander. Thank you. Appreciate is a song that I wrote because I got so frustrated with people pandering to one another and just kind of in this very political type of social environment that I was in. It was like you just couldn't say what you really thought about anything because that was a no-no. And it's just like, man, how can we know anything if we can't say what we think and have that be okay? So Appreciate is just about how I needed to find the truth in what I did within myself and not from anything that anyone would say. And I think that probably for many people and artists alike, we have to learn that no one outside of me is the judge. I am the judge. And I am the one who says if I'm doing my work here.
And then Floating On is a song that I wrote called Lonely People originally. That was the original title of it when it was an instrumental. And I wrote it in New York, and I wrote it kind of about this, kind of these passing people that just like, when you're in New York, you see these people passing a lot of times and always going somewhere, doing something, don't really have the time to stop and do whatever. And it's just the way the city is, and it's just the way people are. And then when you look at a broader scope, that's just the way kind of a lot of our culture has become, just moving. And so I kind of had this sense one day, and actually the full title was Lonely People, Lonely Times, where it's just that we're so close to each other, but we're so far apart in a lot of different ways. So I wrote this in 2009, and I recently recorded it. I wanted to record it on a recording session I did actually with the two new jazz professors here at Western, Jeremy Siskind and Andrew Rathbun. And I've always thought about having a voice on it. And so I asked Ashley if she wanted to write some lyrics to it. And she wrote lyrics that just were perfect for the song. I mean, and we've done it a couple times with some of my compositions where she would write lyrics to it. And they're always great, but I felt like this one just like landed right on. And you know, I just told her a little bit kind of where I was coming from with the song, and she took it the rest of the way and really put kind of this, you know, this really intimate kind of like view on people, and like on just our culture, and just like, I mean, but it's very subtle, and I think it's just really well done. So that's Floating On.
Yeah, the last one is a faith-based song, and it's called Nothing Can Separate, and it's actually written loosely based on a Bible verse. I can't even quote it for you. It's in Romans 8, I think, and it talks about how nothing can separate us from the love of God, like not, you know, angels or demons or just anything on the earth or any of these things. But I so often have felt separated from the love of God. And so one morning I sat down at my piano and I just said, I've got nothing. Like I don't have a clue. And then all of a sudden the song takes form and I'm singing this very simple melody and this very simple chords. And I'm just simply saying, nothing can separate me from your love. And it's like, someone's talking to me at the same time that I'm speaking out the lyrics. It's a certain kind of flow that happens. So it ended up really, I almost threw it out because I said, oh, this song is too basic. It's too boring. And Benji was like, no, I think there's something there. And it's sort of the single on my album of original folk singer-songwriter music. So I'm glad I kept it around.
Yeah, I thought that song was kind of interesting because I feel like coming from not such a learned stance, I guess, of Christian music, but I feel like most of the songs, even modern ones that I've heard, it's sort of after everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
After everything's all fine and you're saying, oh, thank you for, you know, this life and things like this, where this is kind of playing it out. And that I thought that was interesting.
It's actually real.
How good of you to notice. You know, and I think that that's one thing I can offer people is that I do have the perspective of everything's not quite fine, which, you know, as one of my voice students said, he's like, man, I don't want to hear anything depressing. So I just want to feel good when I hear music. And I said, yeah, man, that's cool. Cause he had just listened to my CD, but so many people who were in a different space have told me that my music really helps comfort them, that even though it's not okay, some things are okay. And this is the nature of our planet, is that some things are horribly wrong and some things are wonderful. And we have to live with that juxtaposition all the time. So that's where I live.
And one of the biggest things, just when I started to really get to know Ashley in New York, when we started kind of hanging out, like, just, I think I mentioned it, just the reality of her music and her just desire to be real in it, and more so than anyone I've ever met. And I've told her this many times that, you know, that one instance I remember is that she refused to sing a song in school because she didn't agree with the lyrics or not didn't agree with them, but just didn't believe them.
Which is kind of bratty. And that's a little extreme.
But it definitely threw me, because I was like, wow. I mean, because at the time I would play anything. If someone's going to, you know, make it, I'll play it. Sure. Yeah, it's fine. But the fact that she said, no, I don't believe that song. It's just like, it kind of like jarred me. It's like, wow. And it comes out in her writing, like, and she's that way as a person in a good way. She, you know, she's the most truthful person I know, that she's not going to mess around or beat around the bush. You know, there's not enough time in the day for that. So let's just be honest, to the point. Like, and for me, who oftentimes would beat around the bush and like, you know, try to like, you know, be nice with something. It's like, no, it's interesting because we met in the middle because we're very opposites. And so that comes out in her music. Like, I think just her as a person. So it's really, really neat to kind of now become more involved with that over the years. And it's, I can see it happening in my music because she questions my music and it's like, who else questions my music? So it's great because I see myself growing because of who she is. It's not easy, but.
And I'm working on being more tactful. I've gotten more friends this year than ever before.
I think that's a musical theater thing, to be to the point, because you kind of have to be to the point, I guess.
In theater?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's too, it's a New York thing. Like, I don't know. I just don't feel like people are afraid of direct speech as much over there. I don't know. I definitely never used to speak directly. And then once I started, I was like, this is efficient. This is wonderful. People are mad at me sometimes, but you know, it basically comes down to me wanting to treat people the way I would want. And I really do value what people say and think. And if they don't tell me how they really feel, then I can't work with anything. You know, I can't be mad about it. I can't feel good. It's because it's not real. So,
Anything else that you wanted to talk about on from the music selections that we have there, or just in general? Or
well, I think we can mention, I think two of those tracks are from your, no, three of those tracks are on your latest CD, Harvest Town, right? And then one of those is on my newest, it's kind of an EP release that I just recently put out. The Floating On is put out with Ashley's on the track, but then also Jeremy Siskin and Andrew Rathbun is on there. And this is a 4-song EP, and hers is right. A solo.
Well, and that story is a good explanation of intimate interpretiveness. Estelle's Farewell Gift is the name of Benji's new album, and he wrote a song about an experience we had on the night that my grandmother died. My grandmother Estelle was in a nursing home, and she kept telling us she was ready to go. She was ready to go. And, you know, she was 94, 93. And my mom said, you know, maybe come down and see grandma because she is not doing really well. And we had heard this before, and we'd go down or we wouldn't. And I said, Benji, I said, I think we should go. And our baby was 2 months old, and we named her Rivi Estelle after my grandmother. We took Rivi Estelle, the baby, down there at 2 months old, and they met, and they sat there together in the bed, and grandma got to meet the baby, and she was very clear and very present. The baby was perfect. She just sat there. We got all these pictures of them, and this was down in Toledo. And then on the drive home, my brother called me and he said, grandma's gone. So we all sort of thought in the family that it was grandma meeting the baby with her namesake allowed her to say, okay, I can go now.
Yeah. And the only thing we could think was it was just a gift. I mean, it was a gift for both sides. We believed it was, you know, a gift to Estelle and a gift to us that we got to share pretty much her last hours.
Yeah.
You know, and she was so happy.
And his composition takes a trumpet and a saxophone, and kind of, it's this wonderful little trade-off in the piece, which is very interesting. So we see how one life flows out and another one begins. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a simple, it's simple melody, nothing complex about it all, but it was just because it was a simple, beautiful moment. And that's, you know, that was my interpretation of it. So,
wow, it's a great story. Who are you playing with next week?
We are playing with Jeremy Siskind on piano and Tom Knifick on bass and Christian Newman on drums.
So all Western, either faculty or students. So we've been really lucky to be playing with a lot of the Western faculty since we've been back, and it's just a blast. So we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it's a free concert.
Yeah, and why do you decide to partner with Western musicians, including Keith Hall, who does our Jazz Currents show?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And I think Keith was actually originally slated to play, and then he was out of town, so Christian, who's one of his students, was brought in.
Yeah.
Christian's great. Awesome. But, you know, with Keith especially, I've actually known Keith for probably almost 10 years now, and also Tom, because I went to school, you know, here, and they were my faculty, you know, they were my teachers. But Keith, you know, started hiring me for some stuff when I was a student here, and he was always a huge, just, you know, mentor to me. And they're just fantastic musicians. They're experienced, and they, you know, I love playing with people that are going to push me, that are going to grow me, which is why, you know, New York's a great place. But with, you know, Jeremy and Andrew Rathbun, the new sax professor, and Keith, you know, they spent time in New York, and Tom's been all over. So it's great playing with them. It's great, you know, being around musicians that have experience. And also, I also love playing with, you know, with the students too. Like Christian's a great drummer, and he, you know, there's so much energy and excitement in the music. So it's great to play with the students too. And I know the program at Western is just great because they really push the students to be doing new stuff, to be doing exciting things. And it's great to be around that energy, because kind of once you're out of the school, you know, vibe, I guess you're kind of still, you can either kind of go the route of trying to just make a living or still be really excited about doing new things. And so being around people that are excited to do new things is a great, you know, those are great people to be around. So I guess kind of having this balance of people, you know, we have a lot of great, you know, people in the area to choose from. So it's awesome.
Anything else that that you wanted to talk about?
Anything?
I'm asking you.
I don't know. I think it'd be great if people came out to hear the concert. I think they'd really enjoy it. We're going to do a mix of kind of, I think we're going to do a lot of Ashley stuff. Might do some of my stuff. We're still kind of working out the definite set list, but it's fun when we get to do the stuff together because we try to make it a combined show, which can be sometimes difficult because we have different stuff, but I think it's going to be a really nice evening.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Well, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you. We appreciate it.